Ever notice how, like, when you drop something, it doesn't just float back up? Or how your coffee always goes cold, not hotter? It's like the universe has these, like, ground rules, you know?
Yeah, it's true. At our level, the macroscopic level, things tend to be predictable. They play by those rules of physics we all know. But what if I told you that at the molecular level, things get a lot weirder? Today, we're diving into the world of molecules. We're exploring a chapter titled Getting Molecular Fitting Right.
Definitely intriguing. So for this deep dive, what are we aiming for?
Think of it as like a crash course. Molecular interactions, how these tiny things impact basically everything in biology.
Okay, so getting molecular, it starts with thermodynamics, which always sounds intimidating.
All right, no one wants a pop quiz on that. But understanding how energy works at that level is key. It all starts with this cool analogy. The chapter uses a hot gold bar, like 200 degrees Celsius, just sitting in a room that's a normal 21 degrees.
Okay, I'm picturing it, but how does that relate to tiny molecules?
So that heat from the bar, it spreads out, right? Eventually, everything's the same temperature. That's equilibrium. No more big changes.
Right, like everything chills out, literally.
Yeah.
But how does that energy actually move around, like molecule to molecule?
It's chaos, honestly. Molecules are constantly bumping into each other. Every collision, they're trading energy. So with the hot gold bar, the energetic ones of the bar, they bump into the cooler air molecules and bam, energy transfer until it evens out.
So even when it seems still, there's this microscopic mosh pit happening.
Exactly. Even at equilibrium, those molecules are still going, colliding, exchanging. It's just that we don't see big changes anymore. But with living things, well, things get even more interesting.
Because we're definitely not just sitting around at equilibrium. We're eating, breathing, you know, living.
Exactly. We're open systems, constantly swapping energy and matter with our surroundings. Food in, energy from it, heat out. This constant flow, that's what keeps us from ever reaching equilibrium.
So we're like that gold bar, but instead of cooling down, we have this internal engine keeping us going.
Perfect analogy.
Yeah.
We've got these mechanisms to grab and use energy. But the chapter also talks about cryptobiosis, which is like the opposite.
Cryptobiosis, that sounds intense.
Right. They use the example of tardigrades, you know, those microscopic water bears.
Oh, right. They're like the superheroes of the microscopic world.
Exactly. They can go to this state of suspended animation, extreme temperatures, no water, even space, and they're fine. Everything pauses, maybe for decades, then boom, back to life when conditions are right.
That's wild. But wouldn't that be equilibrium, being paused like that?
Not really. More like a paused computer. It can start back up, unlike a system that's just run out of energy. It's a cool exception, showing how life bends the rules.
Yeah.
But back to molecules. This equilibrium ties into how reactions happen, or if they happen, in living things.
So it's not enough for a reaction to be possible. It also has to happen fast enough for, you know, life to keep going.
Exactly. Like having all the ingredients for cake but never actually baking it. The chapter stresses, for life, reactions can't just be thermodynamically favorable. The speed matters too.
And that's where catalysts come in. Enzymes especially. Those proteins that speed things up without getting used up themselves.
Exactly. They're like the master chefs of our cells.
Yeah.
No enzymes, no life as we know it. And what's wild is how these reactions are affected by temperature.
Like just a few degrees, enough to make us grab a sweater. How does that matter to molecules?
Temperature is all about how fast those molecules are moving and bumping into each other, right? Even a tiny change can impact reaction rates. Imagine it like a giant molecular dance floor.
Okay, I'm seeing it. Hotter it gets, faster the music, more those molecules are going to bump into each other.
Precisely. And here's where it gets really cool. Even a slight fever that can send those reactions into overdrive, messing with the balance in our bodies.
Wow, so it's like this perfectly choreographed dance, and if the music changes tempo even a little, things get messy.
And that's just the start. This whole thing about interactions leads us to coupled reactions, like a relay race, but on a molecular level.
Yeah, so the chapter explains how living things build those really complex molecules, you know, like DNA, proteins, the important stuff. But those reactions, energetically, they're not always favorable on their own.
Wait, so we're making essential stuff, but it's like pushing against how energy wants to work. How's that even possible?
Coupled reactions, that's the key. The chapter uses this analogy of reactions sharing a component. Like, imagine puzzle pieces fitting together, right? One reaction, even if it's good to go energy-wise, might be coupled with one that's not.
So it's like one reaction gives the other a little boost, gets it over that hump. Exactly. One provides the energy, the push, to drive the next one, even if it's not naturally going to happen quickly. And this is Le Chatelier's principle, kind of complicated name, but it explains how even small changes to a system at equilibrium, they cause ripples, shift the balance of the reactions. Like a seesaw, you push down on one side, the other goes up.
It's incredible, this whole network of reactions all supporting each other. And it comes down to, what, molecules bumping into each other at the right time with the right energy?
And speaking of those interactions, we can't forget the forces that dictate how they interact. It's not just about energy, but also attraction, repulsion.
It's like they're on that dance floor still, but instead of music, it's invisible forces moving them closer or further apart.
Perfect analogy. And just like a crowded dance floor, not all interactions are equal. The chapter starts with London dispersion forces, LDS for short. They're these temporary attractions between molecules, kind of fleeting.
Wait, temporary? How does that work?
So even in an atom that seems neutral, the electrons are zipping around, right? Creates these tiny, brief electrical imbalances. For a moment, one side of the atom might be a little negative, the other side a bit positive.
So like a split second of molecular polarity, and that causes the push and pull.
Exactly. And those temporary dipoles, they can induce an opposite dipole in a nearby molecule. Attraction. This is constant, subtle dance, attract, repel, on and on. Now, LDS on their own, pretty weak. But they're happening everywhere, constantly, so they add up.
So it's the combined effect of all these tiny nudges that lets molecules actually interact. Wild. But there are stronger bonds, right? Hydrogen bonds, those were always a big deal.
Ah, hydrogen bonds. Now, those are the VIPs of the molecular world. They form when you've got a hydrogen atom that's already bonded to a very electronegative atom, like oxygen.
Electronegative, meaning it's like hogging the electrons.
Exactly. So hydrogen's feeling a bit electron deprived, starts interacting with nearby electronegative atoms and other molecules. Bam, hydrogen bond. Now, they're not as strong as covalent bonds, where electrons are actually shared. But these hydrogen bonds, they're why water is so unique.
You mean like how water sticks to itself,
mm-hmm.
surface tension, or yeah. how much energy it takes to boil it? That's all down to hydrogen bonds.
You got it. Water is a hydrogen bonding master. Thanks to those two hydrogens and the lone pairs of electrons on the oxygen, each molecule can form up to four hydrogen bonds with its neighbors. Constant forming, breaking, reforming, like a square dance.
No wonder it's so good at sticking to itself and to other molecules. But what happens when you throw other molecules into the mix? It's one thing for water to dance with itself, but cells are way more crowded.
Oh, absolutely. Cellular environment is packed. Trillions of molecules all bumping around. Remember that dance floor analogy?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not just one type of molecule, but a whole mix.
Okay, so it's a molecular party now. Some are mingling, some clinging to each other, and us just probably like, nope, don't touch me.
Oh, chuckles. Exactly. The chapter talks about how hydrophobic molecules, the ones that fear water, they actually clump up in this environment.
Hmm.
Not because they like each other, but because they disrupt water's hydrogen bonding.
So they're minimizing awkwardness, sticking together so the water molecules can have their own hydrogen bonding party undisturbed.
Yeah, love that. And this, it's called hydrophobic interaction. Super important for how cell membranes form, how proteins fold into those specific shapes they need.
So we've got attraction, repulsion, and now this idea that sometimes molecules stick together to avoid causing a scene. But with all this going on, there's got to be some randomness, right? Are these molecules always playing by the rules?
And that's where things get really interesting. The chapter talks about something that's often overlooked, the role of chance, what we call stochasticity in biology.
Hold on. So even with all these rules, sometimes it comes down to a molecular coin flip.
You could say that. At that level, it's not always about a predetermined path, but probabilities. The chapter uses this example of a protein trying to bind to DNA in a cell. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, even if everything's right according to the textbooks.
So it's not always if A, then B. Sometimes it's if A, then. Maybe B or maybe C, who knows?
Exactly. And this is where things get really wild. This randomness, this chance, it's not a bad thing. In fact, it's crucial for how cells function, how they adapt, even how life evolved in the first place. It really throws a wrench in the works, doesn't it? But that's the beauty of it. That's what makes biology so adaptable, so resilient. Imagine if everything was predictable, every little step planned out at the molecular level, no room for change, for evolution, for life, to figure out new solutions when things get tough.
So this randomness, it's like a feature, not a bug.
Exactly. Diversity, adaptability, those come from this chance, this molecular roll of the dice. Crucial for life to not just survive, but to thrive. you know, especially when things around it are always changing.
Wow, so we've gone from the universe's tendency towards disorder to how molecules swap partners on a crowded dance floor. It's been quite a deep dive.
It really has. And I think it highlights something important. Even though we experience the world at this big level where things seem solid, predictable, underneath, it's all these invisible, almost chaotic, but actually precise interactions happening on a tiny scale.
Makes you realize the ground we walk on, the air we breathe, even us, it's all just these particles moving, interacting in ways we're just starting to grasp.
And the deeper we go, the more we learn. Who knows what we'll find? It's incredible to think about.
It really is both humbling and exhilarating, you know? It makes you appreciate the elegance and complexity of life, and it makes you wonder what else is out there to discover.
Absolutely. And on that note, I think it's plenty for our listeners to ponder.
Indeed. We've gone from the universe's tendency towards disorder to how molecules swap partners on a crowded dance floor. We've explored the power of chance encounters and the intricate ballet of life that plays out at the molecular level. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into getting molecular. Until next time, keep those brain cells buzzing.